Now, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now it's time for this.
The Executive Chair.
So, Goffs is an Irish company that's been dealing in horses for over 150 years. Trading horses is a business that gets hit hard in a recession, but Goffs has bounced back. The man who steered the recovery, he's Henry Beebe, Group Chief Executive of Robert J. Goff & Co. PLC, or simply Goffs. And I'm delighted to say he's our Business Person of the Month for February, with the category being equine. Also joining me is a new judge for our Business Person of the Month, our external judge. He's Kevin McLaughlin. He's an old friend of the show, and he's the head of tax at EY Ireland. Kevin, you're very welcome to the programme as well. Before we introduce Henry, our winner, Kevin, I'd like to maybe just ask you to come in and say why Henry's been chosen for the award this month.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons. One, I think, is probably to recognise, you know, a business that's been around for 150 years, which, you know, for Irish businesses is actually quite unique, and we'd like to see a lot more of that. I think probably more recently, I think it is the fact that, you know, what appears to have happened in the sector was, you know, very, very hard hit by the recession, significant drop in revenues, but actually the recovery since then has been really impressive. And I think what I particularly liked is the sense of ambition coming out of that. So it's not just to survive, it's actually to become the number one player in Europe, which I thought was fantastic, and looks like they're well on the way to achieving that.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. Let's talk to the man himself now. He's Henry Beebe. He's the Group Chief Executive of Robert J. Goff & Co. PLC. Henry, you're very welcome to the programme. You spotted bids age 12. Let's start there. Spotting bids. Your father was an auctioneer for a horse, an equine auctioneer for 49 years. This is truly in your blood.
Yes, I mean, it's funny enough, it's one of our slogans in Goffs, it's in our blood. And I suppose, without making myself too much of a pedigree, my pedigree is to be involved in the bloodstock industry. My father was an auctioneer, his father was a trainer, his father was a horse dealer. And as you say, I started spotting bids in the school holidays, age 12. And from the very first bid that I saw standing next to the auctioneer, I thought to myself, God, I'd love to do that. And I was very lucky. I was given a great chance, a huge opportunity at a very young age. And happily, I was given that opportunity, and hopefully I've made the most of it.
Now, the University of Life is what you attended when you were working at Doncaster Bloodstock Sales. You worked here in Ireland. I think you did some time in Coolmore. You worked in Florida. You worked in Kentucky. Tell us about all that. That sounds very glamorous.
Yeah, when I was about 14, Doncaster Bloodstock Sales, which was the company with which my father worked, were looking for a school leaver. And the founders of the company, in 1962, Willie Stevenson and Ken Oliver, said to my father, "What about Henry?" Because I'd been to the school holidays to the sales. And he said, "Well, you better ask him." They were the big bosses of the day. And they sat me down, age 14. I think my voice had even broken, and said, "Do you want to join us?" And I thought, "That's a good idea. Yeah, I'd love to do that." So I was told I had to take O-levels, which I took. I think my mother was horrified, but I left school at 16 with my O-levels. Dad said I had to get, I think, English and maths, and I managed to get those plus a few others. And so then I embarked on, as you say, the University of Life. I spent 6 months of every year with DBS, working the autumn sales circuit, inspecting horses, seeing every part of the business and learning from the bottom up, you know, stuffing envelopes, doing everything like that. But was given a great education by the people above me, my father included, but also two fellows called Michael White and Michael Dale, who'd been there a number of years. And they were great teachers and great friends and great mentors. And then the rest of the year, the other half of the year, I spent being educated. I went to a small stud in England, a very commercial, successful stud. I did the Irish National Stud Course in 1984. I worked at Coolmore in 1985. And then I worked a year with Fasig Tipton Company, who are the largest thoroughbred auctioneers in America, in New York, their headquarters at the time, Florida and Kentucky.
Now, the merger of DBS, Doncaster Blood Sales and Goffs came about in 2007. How did that all happen?
Well, I had taken over running DBS in 1998. We'd done pretty well. We were growing. We were the fastest growing probably at the time. And in 2005, Ema Mulhern, who's a notable breeder through Abbeville and Medicourt Studs, who'd been chairman of the ITBA, chairman of ITM and various other industry bodies, became chairman of Goffs. A bloodstock personality. Now, I don't know if you've ever met Ema. She's a very charismatic person. I'm not just saying that because she is. She's
very father, well.
She's very hard to say no to, put it that way. And she just said to me, "Look, we've a lot in common." And one of her stated objectives when coming into Goffs was to break into the United Kingdom. And she looked at the market, saw the market leader Tattersalls, who are the giant, the biggest in Europe, and saw DBS, and thought to herself the ethos of DBS and Goffs was very similar, and approached me and said, "Look, we've got a lot in common. Why wouldn't we talk?" Now, my mantra would be never say never to anything. So we met for a casual chat. I think it was probably more casual on my part than hers. I think she had a strategy, but she's brilliant at that sort of thing. And we agreed that we could work well together. And so started, I think, about 8 or 9 months of negotiations and chats. We used Mazars as the middleman, a very great diplomatic fellow called Jim Lillis sat in the middle of us. And then in July 2007, we signed on the dotted line. At the same time, she was looking for a full-time industry professional to run the enlarged group, which, and she very flatteringly said that I was the person that she wanted. So the two happened at the same time.
And hence you moving to Ireland in 2007. Just we mentioned it there in the intro, a turnover of 127 million in 2007, falling to 45 million in 2010. It clearly means you arrived at the at the eye of the hurricane.
Well, I think my line is I came to the land of milk and honey and it all dried up pretty quickly. But to be fair, I've never regretted it for a moment. But yeah, I came across in July 2007. There were a few people saying this is going to be a bit of a slowdown and a soft landing. They were told to shut up, I think I remember, from the news and the radio and everything. And yeah, then we held our most important sale in 2008, the Orbi sale, the day Lehman Brothers folded. And the whole thing went south. I mean, the whole industry, but the whole country, the whole world really went south. So as you say, we went from 127 million to 45, which was a big drop. It was painful. We had to do a lot of cost cutting. We had a redundancy program. And we relied on the support of a lot of people. And, the most important people really were the people that worked for us. You know, I may be the captain of the team, but to use the rugby analogy, Brian O'Driscoll could never score a try unless the rest of the team got the ball for him. So we worked very closely with our team to work out where we'd go. And they put their heads down and said, well, we'll get through this. We talked to our major shareholders, of which the Aga Khan is the biggest, a great supporter of Irish Bloodstock. And rather than say what's happened, well, he did say what's happened, but he didn't sort of get too wound up about it, said, let's find our way through it. And I think, to be fair as well, one of the themes of the last few years is that the bankers have been blamed for everything. And I can only speak from personal experience. Gough's has been with Bank of Ireland, not to give them an advert, but Gough's have been with Bank of Ireland for as long as anybody can remember. And rather than beat us up and cause trouble, they just said, what's your problem? How can we help? And they were very supportive.
It might help that the Aga Khan is a shareholder in that regard, I'd suggest.
But well, it probably does.
Don't want to be cynical here.
You know, but. Well, it probably does, and the fact that we had people backing us and the fact that our shareholders were prepared to back us and step in. But, you know, we have to run the business as a commercial business. It has to wipe its nose, and that's what we did.
Henry, one of the things that fascinated me, looking back through the figures, was the level of bad debts that you incurred. I didn't realise this, but you say that the auctioneer pays the seller and then collects from the buyer. Yeah. That's surely a very precarious place that
it's pure madness really, but it's the business model we've inherited. European auctions and most of the bloodstock auctions in the world, it's the way the market has evolved over the years, long before people like me turned up.
Just to follow through on that, so if I'm selling a horse, you're paying me whatever some guy in the ring decides, he's, and you give me the money, and then you have to go after him to collect it.
Well, to put it very clearly, when I drop the gavel on the horse that you have bought for me to sell, for Gough's to sell, it's essentially banked money for you with a time lag of 35 days.
Wow.
Our terms and conditions guarantee to pay the vendor after 35 days, well, between 35 and 40 days after the sale. Whether or not we've been paid, then it's up to us to deal with that. So we deal with those people, and that's why we ended up in the position we're in. It's not the perfect business model, but it's the business model that works for the bloodstock industry, and it's one of the strengths of using a company such as Gough's rather than selling privately, because you don't have to go and chase the money yourself. So we do two things for you as a breeder. We create a marketplace, and we bring people from last year 30 different countries into Ireland to buy the best Irish bloodstock in Gough's, and then we guarantee to pay you.
Standing up there with the gavel in your hand, as you say, is only one part of the job. I see that you say that you hum scales to rev up before you start. Tell me about the buzz of the sale. Tell me about selling Ban Empire for 2.3 million. Tell me what that's like to be up there with the hammer in your hand saying, and just trying to get the room really, really excited.
Well, it's wonderful. It's what I live for. I mean, I'm very lucky. I don't have a job. I have a way of life, but I love that. And that's what we're all aiming for. All the other work that we all do is to that one moment when we're standing on the rostrum with the gavel in our hand and a horse walks in. And so it's a bit like, not that I've taken any, of course, but it's probably a bit like taking a drug. When you get one bid, you want another one. And I was the lucky auctioneer who auctioned Chiquita for 6 million euro in 2013, the highest price ever in Ireland, the highest price at any breeding stock sale in the world that year. And somebody said, what was your first thought when the hammer came down? And I said, rather perversely, one of disappointment. because when you've got a bid,
you
always want another one. And so when you get, I was opened at 3 million for that horse. When I got to 3, I wanted 4. When I got to 4, I wanted 5. When I got to 5, I wanted 6, and so on and so forth. So it's a great thrill. But I think it's not just selling horse for 6 million. It's a horse for a small one-man bandit from Cork or wherever it may be from, who brings up his 2 grand horse and gets 2.5. And the fact that you feel you may have contributed to getting that extra 500 quid for him, that's important, and that's what we live for.
Henry, just I want to finish on, I suppose, the importance of the equine industry to this country. Again, you're central to it. I know, as I say, standing up with a gavel in your hand is only one part of your job. You say you'll do a lot of deals out there, drinking tea with horse owners and that, checking stock, doing all that sort of stuff. But the importance of how do you make sure that we stay in the prominent position that we are with the O'Briens and with Coolmore and all those great places doing such a great job? How do we keep that in Ireland?
Well, what is so great about Ireland and Irish bloodstock is that this is one thing where undoubtedly we are world leaders. Like, I could take you to a sale in Keeneland in Kentucky, and I could stand at the top of the yard with you, and I would reckon I'd be able to tell you without fear of contradiction which were the Irish fellas leading the horse, because there's an instinct. It's bred into the Irish people. And that's why we're world leaders. Now, we sold 109, 110 million euro of horses to the international world last year for Ireland's leading breeders. Our big challenge is to persuade more of those Irish horses to stay in Ireland, because there was 120 plus million euro of Irish horses sold in the south of England last year. We would say with Chiquitas, Bad Impress, Franco Falls, See the Stars Falls, that we can deliver the best prices. But Irish bloodstock is amongst the best in the world because of the heritage we have, because of the instinct, because people such as the aforementioned O'Briens, Magners, Mullins, it's bred into them. It's instinctive. They don't have to think about it. They didn't have to go and learn it. They were born into it.
Right.
And people like me who are industry professionals, and the reason this market recovered so quickly, the bloodstock market in Ireland recovered so quickly, is because the people who came in at the heights disappeared. But people like the people we've mentioned and people like me, we don't know anything else. So somebody said to me at the depths of the crash, what are you going to do if it all goes wrong? And I said, I'll get ready for the next sale, as will everybody else in Goffs, because we can't, nor do we want to do anything else. So that's why Ireland are world leaders, because the Irish are the best. We have the best. We are the best. And we win at the top of the level.
Well, listen, you're an absolute credit to your industry, and well done for speaking with such passion. I'm going to ask Kevin McLaughlin now from EY, our external judge, to present our Newbridge pen. Yes, we have a Newbridge pen and a Newbridge business card holder engraved with your name, saying that you're the business person of the month for February 2016. Now, just before we present the award to Henry, I'm going to ask Kevin. Kevin, you wanted to say something about the EY programme just while you're here. Quickly tell me that.
Sure, Bobby. So the EY Entrepreneur of the Year programme for 2016 has been launched. Closing date for nominations is the end of February. So really just wanted to put the call out there to all great entrepreneurs who are interested in getting involved. It'd be great, actually, if Henry would join us.
Yeah, he might. We can bend his arm on the way out.
But yeah, it's a great, great programme. As you know, Bobby, Newstalk have had a long association with us. It's a great opportunity to recognise great entrepreneurs, great entrepreneurial stories. And it's a great opportunity for entrepreneurs to get in and immerse themselves in a really strong development programme of executive education and to build really strong networks that will last for them.
Well, I can't wait for Boston already. So let's get on with the business at hand, and let's present Henry with his award.
Congratulations, fantastic story. Really impressed and delighted to award you the winner this month.
Thank you. Well, if I could just say in passing, and there's no false modesty, as I said about Brian O'Driscoll, there's 15 people on the pitch. In Goffs, there's 29. And we can't do anything. There's lots of people. I get the glory standing on the rostrum with other very good auctioneers. But we have to have the guys presenting the horses getting ready. So this is really an award for Goffs to be maybe Business Company of the Month, if I could say. So thanks
absolutely
very much.
You can.
And it's a great privilege to get it. Thank you.
And to close out on a rugby analogy, you're a Scottish man living in Ireland. You say that you support Celtic rugby, you'll support Ireland, you support Scotland, you'll basically support anybody who beats England.
Anybody playing England, absolutely. Now, being a Scot anywhere at the moment isn't great, but my granny was Irish. And I'll just tell you one wee story. A few years ago, we were sitting watching the Calcutta Cup with my son, who at the time was 16, and England were beating Scotland again. And at half time, he looked at me and said, "Oh, for goodness sake, Dad." So what? Can we not just be Irish and be done with it?
Henry Beebe, Business Person of the Month for February. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.